They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Mark Stein is here, New York Times NBA writer and my hallway bubble mate. Mark has embraced the hallway lifestyle here at the Coronado Springs. I spend most of my days sitting on these pattern couches and chairs, hanging out, waiting for teams to roll through. And Mark, you're all in on this lifestyle, aren't you?
I think you and I are the two most like-minded out of the, I guess there, I'd say there's about 20 of us here. Mm-hmm. There's the 10 quote independents that we fall under. And then there's 10 or so people from Turner and ESPN. I run into you the most. You and I are, I guess that means we're old. But there's no, like, I think it, maybe people don't understand it. Like, there's so few places we can go. The media access is restricted to such a degree. And the one place we are allowed to go is there's 7 practice sites. 3 of them are here in this convention center we're sitting in right now. And so this hallway that you just mentioned, this is like the one last place that we're allowed to go without getting thrown out. Mm-hmm. So it's been good to us, man. It has been good to us.
You know, I hope we never have to do this again, because that will mean that this global pandemic will have lifted. But I've really enjoyed this experience. I mean, you know, you're like me. When you have to go cover something, you hop on a plane, you're spending 3 days in a hotel, and that's to get one, maybe two teams out of the way. I mean, we sit here for 5-6 hours. We might get 5-6 teams.
No question. And I totally came in expecting much worse, and mm-hmm. that has for 100% been the pleasant surprise that, you know, access to the marquee teams is more restricted than ever. You're, you know, Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, it's challenging, but there are lots, you know, you and I just did a Nets practice. Mm-hmm. There was only 4 reporters here. And, you know, that is one of the biggest perk to me is the seats that we're getting in these games. Like, that's back to when I started. I mean, the Jimmy Butler, TJ Warren battle. I mean, I literally could have reached my hand out and touched the game. I was sitting so close. It was a beautiful thing. But the second best perk, I agree with you, is just there's 22 teams here and 15 or so we've got pretty damn good access to.
You might be the one that sheds a tear when the Visa Center goes away this weekend.
Not might. I will definitely, like, I will be. That place is incredible. Like, there's no fans, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's no courtside seats. It's a very small gym. They won't use it beyond the seating games. But, I mean, you are on the floor like, you know, 93, 94 was my first season covering mm-hmm. the league. And I vividly remember my last game, my first season as a Clipper beat writer, sitting courtside for David Robinson scoring 71 points and winning the scoring title. Like, we just don't get those seats anymore. And, you know, no one's going to shed a tear for us. We've got the greatest jobs in the world. But when I started, we sat. That's how close we sat. If you were the beat writer, you sat in the game. And that's what it's like at Visa. It's heaven. Heaven to sit that close.
It's kind of funny. I was at the Blazers game last night against the Mavericks, recording this on Thursday or Wednesday. And, you know, Damian Lillard, you know, makes, you know, the game finishes strong for the Blazers. Damian Lillard walks off and he's looking at the quote crowd saying, put some respect on my name. And somebody asked him after, like, Dame, who are you talking to? And he's like, I guess the media. I guess we're talking to the media. But I think the media puts a lot of respect on Dame's name.
Yeah, I don't know. That was completely contrived. I mean, it was great theater for us, but mm-hmm. I don't know what a. He's been getting a lot of media love, so I he might be mad at Paul George and Patrick Beverly. I don't think he can be too mad at us.
No, I don't think so either. Before we get to a couple things from what we've seen during these seeding games, what's your understanding of kind of the plans for next season? I mean, I talked to Michelle Roberts this week, and she made it pretty clear to me that it's highly unlikely we start before 2021. Like that. It, you know, both the turnaround time from the end of the finals to potential training camp and the start of the season, and, you know, the fact that, you know, it's probably better to kick the can down the road a little bit to see if this pandemic lifts and there's more access to a normal schedule. The NBA wants to start on December 1st. That's in part to get all 82 games in. That's in part to avoid competing with the Olympics in the summer. How do you think this, you know, from a lot can change, obviously, but from where we sit right now, what's your best guess on how this all shakes out?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see how we start before 2021. It just doesn't seem feasible. Obviously, Christmas, that's the date. I think, you know, they said December 1st, but I think they threw out December 1st with kind of Christmas in mind. Oh, we'll push it back, but it'll only be till Christmas. I mean, the way things stand now, they're going to have to stick with bubbles and, you know, regional pods. That's the phrase du jour right now, that, you know, it's going to be some sort of regional, you know, 2, 3, 4, how many ever regional bubbles it is. But I think ultimately they'll, you know, if they get a sense that, okay, we could have fans by April, I think that will kind of help shape how soon they start. I mean, I think they're pretty realistic. There's no way there's going to be fans in arenas at the start of next season, but the hope is there will be fans in arenas at some point next season. So if they can get a handle on when that may be, I think that kind of helps guide them to a start date. But yeah, I cannot see it starting in December. I don't see it.
Yeah, and I don't think that there should be that much emphasis on the Olympics, because I don't know if the Olympics are going to happen. I mean, it sounds crazy to say in the summer of 2020 that the Olympics might not happen a year from now, but it's the realities of the situation. I mean, you can't concern yourself with, you know, going up against swimming if, you know, the chances are that swimming is not going to happen. So
especially when the truth is, I mean, the league office is concerned about the Olympics. I'm sure Greg Popovich really wants to coach in the Olympics, having waited his whole life because that's his dream job. But front offices, executives don't care about the Olympics.
No.
And they're, you know, they don't want their guys playing these games anyway, truth be told. So I you know, worrying about the 2021 Olympics, or whatever if they're still calling it the 2020 Olympics in 2021, like that's such a down the list concern at this point.
You wrote an interesting piece this week on the interactions of players at these hotels. This was something I was fascinated by coming in, because as we sit here in the Coronado Springs, you know, Nets players were coming out of their practice, Heat players were coming out of their practice. Now, there's not any friction between the Nets and the Heat right now, but, I mean, that could be any number of teams. And you wrote about what's happening over at the Yacht Club, and we're seeing stuff happening here. What have you observed about how these players are interacting with each other?
I came into this fascinated by the Yacht Club, because remember, when they made the assignments in mid-June, it was based on your record. So instantly there was, oh, the Yacht Club, that's where the bad teams go, that's the bad hotel. And I think the reality is,
interesting name for a crappy hotel.
I don't think the rooms are super different from, you know, the top 8 teams are at the Grand Estino, the next 8 teams are at the Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. And like you said, the Yacht Club, I think from the writers, if we got traded to the Yacht Club, we would all be pretty giddy. But it did get kind of this stigma, like it was a 3-tier hierarchy. And so I was curious right away, would guys on those 6 teams feel, how much hotel envy would there be? And I think there is, you know, hotel envy, certainly, you know, even Devin Booker told me, he's like, you know, Yacht Clubs sounds better than it is, but he's fine with it. But then what happened was those 6 teams got so desperate, because only at best 2 could survive, and now we're having this amazing play-in chase. So what I heard from a lot of the teams are that it baked this new tension in, that when, you know, the Yacht Club, there's 6 teams, they all run into each other in the lobby, near the meal rooms. It's not as spread out as where we are. You know, we're in the Coronado Springs, the hallway we're in is connected to the Grand Estino. There's much more real estate over here. There's a lot less real estate over at the Yacht Club. So I think it was interesting that, you know, Frank Kaminsky said, you know, we root against everybody we see. You know, Monty Williams said, yeah, it's getting a little, the stairs are getting a little colder getting on and off the elevator. And it's because, you know, Phoenix could go 8-0 and not make it. San Antonio's been a Cinderella. They likely won't make it. I mean, it is, that part of it is fascinating, I think.
Yeah. It's just going to, and it's going to get more fascinating as we get deeper into the playoffs, when all these teams congregate here at the Coronado Springs, they start passing each other. I mean, these 7-game series get physical.
Yeah.
We'll see how that all kind of plays out. Since you mentioned the play-in game, I think it's been great. Or the play-in series, whatever they want to call it. I think it's been great. It has energized this entire restart, because if you didn't have it, you would have teams like the Bucks and the Lakers to a degree going through the motions a little bit. You would have teams.
I think they have.
They have, yeah. And teams that have locked in on seeding, you know, resting guys and made the whole kind of experience lose some of its luster. Because you have six teams out west just fighting with each other to get back, it's added something significant to this part. Do you believe that there's any momentum to have this come back, to have this be part of the league moving forward? I know Adam Silver likes it. Like, he has petitioned and brought up this idea before, but when I bring it to coaches, and I had this conversation with Brett Brown just the other day, he's like, nah, we got 82 games to figure out seeding, and that's always the pushback. You got 82 games to figure out seeding. How do you think it? What do you think the future is of the play-in series?
I think the play-in game will happen. I think the midseason tournament will ultimately happen. Adam Silver wants these things badly, and the interest that this is generating is exactly why they're looking for any way they can to spice up the regular season and get people more interested in it. And, you know, I'm not going to annoy you with a bunch of soccer talk, because I know you're not as fond of it as
huge,
I am.
Huge soccer fan.
I don't want to. You're what? 60 seconds of soccer
seconds,
from
ten
your
seconds
10
of soccer.
Seconds
ten
of soccer from
60's
your,
a lifetime
from your old radio show. But that's what world soccer has that we don't, because of promotion and relegation. Regular season games always matter. We, in this country, it's not just a basketball thing. In all of our sports, with the probable exception of the NFL, there are too many regular season games that don't mean anything. And that's what this play-in thing has done. The Suns showed up here six games out, and everybody thought they shouldn't be here. And they've been great and have thrust themselves into the middle of this thing. And let's face it, the 88 games were for TV. It was partly to create a semblance of an exhibition season, because the top teams didn't want to just go right into the playoffs. They wanted some games to kind of find themselves again. But it was for TV. It was to create a TV inventory to try to mitigate some of the losses from canceling so many games. And without the race in the West, a lot of this would have been just, why are we doing it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been amazing offensive performances. There's been crazy box score lines, but we needed this race for the eighth spot to make these 88 games mean something.
And think about how engaging it would be if the East were better. You know, if Bradley Beal was playing, if Davis Bertans was playing, if the Nets came with a full complement, although the Nets have been great, you know, in this restart itself. I think it should be here to stay. And I mean, you can tweak it a little bit if you want to say, all right, you've got to get within two games of that eighth spot to force a play-in series. I'd be okay with that, because, you know, we've seen the quality of basketball at the end of regular seasons. It's bad. Like, teams that are out of the playoff race, they just kind of start resting their stars and start, frankly, tanking and playing for lottery position. If they think they've got a shot at forcing a play-in series, it's only going to increase the quality of play, which is good for the NBA. So there's a trade-off, sure, but I think overall it's a positive for the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, you feel for Memphis because they've just had a nightmare.
Yeah.
With the injuries, they've lost JJJ, they've lost Winslow, so it's a weakened group. They're struggling. The Suns, the Spurs, the Blazers are all just playing great. And so, I mean, as we go into this, Memphis could legitimately fall all the way out now, which is sad for them because they've been such a great story this season. But I don't think there's any question that this has livened things up, and it's exactly what Adam Silver envisioned.
Mm. So as we look at some of the quote stars of all this, I want to ask you about Devin Booker. I admit I came into all this as a Devin Booker skeptic. Let's call it that. I'll admit this. You know, on the podcast, I have likened him in part to Corey Maggette. I thought he was a scorer. I didn't know if he was a winner. I have had my doubts about Devin Booker. Watching him play in these critical games, this big situation, I've been incredibly impressed. Like, he looks like a leader out there. He's defending and he's scoring, you know, outside of Damian Lillard and I guess TJ Warren, huge numbers for his team. Has Devin Booker shown you anything you haven't seen before, or is this just Devin Booker is getting a spotlight shown on him for maybe the first time in his career?
No, I think it's more than that. He's galvanized that team. I mean, Monty Williams has as well. I mean, there's no question that Monty, he's just brought he's brought, you know, a sideline calm and presence that's really helped that team. But you think about the Suns. I mean, they're in this to get into the playing game, and none of these games, they're never playing the teams that are right near them. Like, they haven't had a schedule where they could actually play the teams that they're competing with to slice into the gap faster. Now, where they have benefited is they're playing some teams that are resting guys, and certainly that has helped. But now Booker's gone to a different level. You know, you just did a great piece on him. And, you know, I've talked to him multiple times during this thing, and just he struck me as someone who just, like, look, he played at a college powerhouse, and being in the NBA and not going to the playoffs, it's really worn on him, and he hates it. And so I don't know if they can take that last step and get in the playoff game. But I mean, again, I feel sorry for the Grizzlies if they fall all the way out, but based on what we've seen so far, Suns Blazers would be the most compelling play-in round to put Lillard against Booker, and let's, you know, they've been the two best guys here. You know, let's see them go at it for the number eight spot. I think it would just be a great weekend theater if we get that.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. And it you know, it struck me, I went from being a Devin Booker skeptic to like a full believer in a matter of weeks. And when I saw Draymond Green on TV saying, you know, get my man Devin Booker out of Phoenix, if this was 2 years ago, I'd have agreed with him. But it's not. Like, there is more stability in Phoenix than there's been in like a generation. Like, you have a head coach in Monty Williams who has solidified a spot that was once, you know, you don't even want to etch a coach's name on the door because it gets changed so often. I mean, Devin Booker had, what, five coaches in the first 5 years? James Jones, you know, solidified that front office as well, one of the most liked, you know, former players in the league. It's a functional franchise again. I mean, the owner, there's still some question marks about, no question, but that's not a franchise that you run away from, I don't think, right now. I think that's a franchise that you have to have at least some confidence can build from this point forward.
Well, look, they got a lot of heat for not getting up for TJ Warren, and I think that is still justified to basically just get cash for someone who's shown the scoring ability Warren has here. I mean, that remains a question mark, but you also have to say on the flip side, if they don't make that move, they probably can't bring in Rubio and Oubre, and Rubio has also been, you know, just
huge,
a stabilizer for them, a floor leader. He knows how to, he just complements Booker well. He's so solid defensively from a, you know, team scheme perspective. But that's another thing. You know, they haven't had Oubre. And, I think Oubre had the best season of his career. But the reality is Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson have been solid. I think they've been more solid with those guys, leaning on those two. So, I mean, the Suns have been a great story. And it really is going to be interesting if it is Suns Blazers, I love that they're giving bubble MVP and all bubble team. Like, it's fun.
Sure,
like, we've had enough negativity this year. What, there's no harm in having some fun.
I agree, and I've been talking to PR guys. Like, you got a pitch for me for your all bubble team? Anybody got names there? So it is pretty fun. You touched on TJ Warren there, and the Suns not getting a lot for him or anything at all, really. What do we make of TJ Warren beyond the bubble? Like, do you look at this as being the start of something big for TJ Warren? Because he's been an electric scorer every level he's played on. Like, he was averaging 25 a game at NC State. He came into the NBA by his second year. He was cracking double figures. The three-point shooting is new. And, you know, he's a man of few words, TJ Warren. But, like, you talk to him about it, and there's no real explanation for it. He says he wasn't playing much during the pandemic, but are you a believer that the Pacers have something here, that this is now a potential all-star on their roster to pair along Oladipo in the future?
I might be the wrong guy to ask here, because I've only been to two of the Pacers games live, and in those two games, he had 16 and 12.
I saw you tweet that.
When I'm not there, he's averaging 40. So yeah. I'm actually worried that, like, I'm never going to be allowed in St. Elmo's again, one of my favorite restaurants, because I think I'm the TJ Warren stopper. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, like, when I saw him, the two games I saw him were the two games where, you know, he had the big showdown. You know, one was playing against his old team, Phoenix, and Mikal Bridges just did a great job taking him out of that game. And then the big Jimmy Butler game in Miami, you know, I thought Butler was great on him early, and Warren got passive. But the Pacers need something. They need this Warren explosion to be real, because Oladipo is clearly not back to where he was. And Sabonis hasn't been here. So the Pacers, they just gave Nate McMillan a contract extension. They had a very good season no matter what happened in the playoffs. But they've got some big question marks going forward. They're going to have to, you know, Oladipo's up for an extension that's over $100 million. You've still got the Sabonis-Miles Turner thing. Do they have? Can those two guys play together? Do they have to move one? So if Warren is, it's not going to be a 35-point-a-game guy, but if he is a legit scorer, that's a huge bonus for them, because – you know, when I look at the Pacers, I see a lot of hard decisions these days. They need something that kind of works out well for them, a surprise development. Mm-hmm.
And especially one on such a manageable contract. You know, it was an onerous contract for Phoenix. It's a welcome contract for the Pacers, only $11, $12 million per year over the next two. So, you know, those are the kind of guys you got to hit on. Like, you need, you know, reasonably paid high-level talent to flesh out your team to become a real title contender. The other guy I wanted to ask you about was Michael Porter Jr. And, you know, I loved that pick on draft night a couple of years ago. And I love the rationale that Tim Connelly and that front office had. It's like, okay, like, that's a top three talent. We have a lot of young talent. We don't necessarily need another one. Why don't roll the dice and hope the back heals up? Well, you know, the back has healed up over the last year. And, you know, he has been playing extremely well in the bubble. I mean, are you buying, like, Michael Porter Jr. as now being that top three pick we thought he was going to be, or do you still have questions about how he fits into the NBA?
I mean, the only questions are the durability. I mean, talent. I mean, I had the stat in my newsletter. He had back-to-back 30 and 10 games. We haven't seen a rookie do that since Blake Griffin 10 years ago. So, I mean, the talent's unquestioned.
He had a pull-up three on LeBron in that game against the Lakers. I was like, all right, you got the confidence is there,
yeah,
too.
I mean, and it just gives Denver, I mean, Denver just has this array of talent that if they ever want to package two or three mm-hmm. of these guys, they can go out and make a massive trade mm-hmm. and really go to another level. Now, I know they'd rather do it the homegrown way. I know they'd rather be patient, you know, go the direction they have. And look, you know, Jamal Murray, there are people in this league who still think he has superstar potential and that he has another step or two to go. So they might be able to do it just the way they've built their team. But they're in a very enviable position with all the assets they have if they want it. You know, I mean, everybody loves Jokic, but I love him. I think, you know, some people question would going skinny hurt him. I don't think it has. I think he's still a monster. And Denver has so much upside. If you're a Nuggets fan, you have to be excited about the future.
Bull might be able to.
Yeah, play. I mean, he's been amazing too. Yeah, I mean,
guy. They're just like, you know what? This guy was projected as a first round pick for a while. There was questions about his love for the game. All right, we're drafted what, like 50 something? Screw it. Let's roll the dice. Like, more teams should be doing that. Like, if you have you're in a position where you don't need that young guy to develop right away, roll the dice on the high talent. You'll miss on some. We hit on others, and that's what Denver's done.
That front office has drafted very well over an extended period of time.
Mm. Yeah, no question about that. Last thing I want to ask you about is the future of Ty Lue, currently in a Clippers assistant coach. Turned down the Lakers job a year ago for various reasons. But now, you know, the buzz I get sitting in the hallway from running into people is that it's almost a lock that Ty Lue gets a job next year. Now, the openings aren't there right now, but there are some questions about whether it's Brooklyn, although Jacques Vaughn's done an incredible job with that team. The Pelicans, you know, their potential because David Griffin, you know, is a new GM who inherited Alvin Gentry. The Rockets, perhaps. Mike D'Antoni's going to work out in Philadelphia. We don't know what's going to happen with Brett Brown. I mean, are you of the belief that, you know, it's not a question of if, but when in the next few months that Ty Lue lands someplace?
100%. He's number one on the list. He's a lock. All four of those places, he would be a top two contender probably for any of those jobs. And so, you know, when he turned down the Laker job, a lot of eyebrows were raised, but it was the right call. Mm-hmm. He didn't like the terms that the Lakers were offering. It was a shorter term deal. It was lower money. He's like, hey, I've already got a championship on my resume. He didn't want to just be tied to how long LeBron is going to stay a Laker. And totally agree with you. He will have, you know, there's a possibility that all four of those jobs open mm-hmm. and he will be in the mix. I think
there could be a fight for him. Like yeah. it could be a bidding war to get him.
Because
Griff,
I think
Griff
a lot
was the GM in Cleveland. I mean,
a lot of people think that New Orleans will be the first team to make a change. Mm-hmm. If you're Ty Lue, let's say the Pelicans offered him the job next week, mm-hmm. do you jump at it? If I'm Ty Lue, probably not. Mm-hmm. I want to wait and see what's out there because he will probably have his pick of 2, 3, maybe even 4 opportunities. Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting here recording this outside of where the Nets just practiced. This is the most fascinating job because, as you know, I can't recognize more than 5 guys in that gym right now. But you know, come next year, you're talking Durant, you're talking Kyrie Irving back in the mix, and you know, among the co-favorites to win
a
championship.
But you know, really, they're all all those teams are fascinating. I mean, Coach and Zion would certainly have potential. Now, I mean, you'd rather go. I think any coach would rather go east than west because. It's still not as competitive in the East. So I mean, Philly, I don't think there would be any short of intrigue trying to get that thing on the right track. And Houston, just by virtue of the way that they're always going to make moves, those are all wild.
I'm not sure I'd jump at Houston at this point, and especially if you're Ty. Like, how do you devise sort of a strategy to make that work with Russ and James, unless they make a deal?
I just think he's got such a good touch mm-hmm. on the human side. I'm a huge D'Antoni fan. I think Houston is crazy.
I agree.
If they get rid of Mike D'Antoni.
I agree.
Absolutely nuts. I mean,
that's such a weird situation too.
With the personnel they have, he's the best coach mm-hmm. for it by far. He always gets guys to outproduce what they were before. I cannot understand why the Rockets would even look in a different direction. Now, if they change the roster, they change the composition of the team, that's one thing. But to me, Houston would be insane to make a change. But look, if they disappoint in the playoffs again, I'm sure he's going to be the scapegoat. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, if not that Ty Lue is going to call and ask for my advice, but if he did, if all four of those were on the table, I'm not sure how you pick.
I mean, Mike D'Antoni's shown how flexible he can be as a head coach. Like, if 10 years ago I told you Mike was running a team that put the ball in one guy's hands for 20 seconds of a clock, you never would have believed it.
He's totally changed his mm-hmm. philosophy. And like you said, he's shown way more flexibility mm-hmm. than anyone ever thought. And he doesn't have a championship on his resume, so people kill him for that. And until he gets one, he's always going to have to answer for that. But, I mean, he's been one of the most successful and revolutionary coaches mm. of the modern game. And I was around those Phoenix teams a lot. I spent a lot of time covering them. So, you know, I'm a D'Antoni mm. fan, and I don't understand.
Let me ask this real quick. Is your gut feeling that Pop is back next year?
It is. I do think... it's hard for me to see him walking away from a bubble season.
Yeah.
But it's Pop, and the truth is none of us know.
Yeah.
Like, only he can make that call. But I do think, even just the way he's made it all about development, mm-hmm. like, you know, Patty Mills, who's their sixth man, their tempo changer, like, they haven't even been playing him because they want the kids to get minutes. They basically made Patty Mills a coach mm-hmm. in this thing. It just seems like, yeah, I think he's had he's coaching this thing with an eye on next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, he sort of accomplished what he set out to accomplish. Kawhi's gone, and who knows what they do this summer with some of those contracts. It might be an appropriate time, but maybe after the Olympics. I mean,
What do you think? You think this is it?
Maybe, only because I don't know what happens next year and when it starts. And does he really want to go back into bubbles next year? Like, if we're and he might quit late in the game and elevate somebody, you know, from his staff to be the head coach. But if it turns out to be another bubble season, I'm not sure he'd want to do that and drag it out, especially if you're not on a team that,
I don't know, man. Yesterday, JJ Redick was on the James Corden show talking about how he brought Pop wine.
He still likes that part of... no question. Mark, always appreciate your time, man. Check out Mark's newsletter over at the New York Times every single week. Follow him on Twitter as well. I will see you tomorrow, same time, same station, same hallway.
Yeah, no microphones, same hallway.